Good evening. Thanks for listening to Heartstock Radio. I am Carol Murphy, your host. And this evening, our guest is Sika Schmitz of Bead and Reel. In just a moment, she will be with us and tell you all about what she is up to. And in the meantime, remember that you can email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook. And thanks for listening. We'll be right back with Sika Schmitz. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy, your host. Thanks for tuning in and listening. This evening, our guest is Sika Schmitz. Hi, Sika.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Let's start out with just a little brief intro about what you are up to, which is kind of a lot.
It is a lot. Where would you like me to start? What I'm up to right now?
Well, maybe a little intro of what Bead and Reel is and Impact Fashion Show.
Absolutely. So Bead and Reel is, at this point, it's an online sustainable fashion community. It started originally as an e-commerce site for sustainable fashion, for vegan fashion, fair trade fashion, organic, kind of any of these different terms that people might be looking for within sustainability. And over the years, evolved to grow a blog that became somewhat popular, doing a lot of events from which the fashion show evolved out of, which is now the Impact Fashion Show, our annual event in Los Angeles. And it also is a community of an affiliate network of about 100 different brands and content creators, bloggers, writers. So it encompasses a lot of different aspects of sustainable fashion. And I guess they both keep me really busy.
I can only imagine. So early on, where were you from? We were just talking about you talking to us from Washington, but I'm wondering, where did you grow up and what was that like? And did that influence you to do what you're doing now?
Yes. So I am in Washington now, and I am actually originally from Washington, although I had quite a lot happen in between. So I'm from a very, very small, quiet, beautiful town in the Olympic National Park. It's a big retirement community, so it's just very quiet, very sleepy. I thought it was just terribly boring growing up here. I just could not get out of here fast enough. So I left as soon as I could, going to college in Oregon, and then moved to New York City for several years, and ultimately ended up in Los Angeles, where I spent much of my adulthood, which was all super fun and exciting and a great place to be when you're young and building companies and finding yourself. And then, you know, you get a little bit older and suddenly you realize, oh gosh, there really is something nice about peace and quiet and nature. And I became very homesick in a literal way of just, you know, this place that I couldn't wait to get out of, I suddenly couldn't wait to get back to. And so just about 2 years ago, I moved back up to Washington. And I'm very fortunate that I had built this, you know, online business that could come with me.
Well, I can certainly relate to that because we're sitting here in my hometown, which I came back to, and really shadow a lot of those emotions. So did you have a formal education that led you to build this whole online ecosystem?
Sort of. So I really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And I had started college much younger than many people. So even though I was in college...
How old was that? Sorry.
I was 15.
Oh, wow. So you were on the fast track.
I was. I've always kind of been a little bit in a hurry to get somewhere. I'm not totally sure where. But so I started college and had to pick a major, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. I chose art history because I really love art. And I don't know what you do with an art history major, but I enjoyed studying it. So after I graduated, I really realized that I didn't know what to do with an art history major and that I had always loved fashion. I'd loved fashion magazines. I'd loved, you know, dressing my dolls. I learned to sew. I'd really never thought of it as an actual career that somebody does. You know, I didn't know anybody that worked in fashion. It just seemed very far away and abstract. But I ultimately decided after I graduated to go back to school. I got a degree in fashion design. And I did do quite a lot of different interesting things. You know, I interned at Oprah magazine when I was living in New York, and that was fashion, but it was also got to learn a little bit about media and editorial. And so I went into fashion design thinking that's what I really wanted to do. But again, that doesn't really set you up for maybe, you know, having your own company that teaches you a lot about how to sew or make patterns, things like that. So I don't know that I necessarily had a formal education in what I'm ultimately doing, but I have this fashion background, this love of fashion, and my parents are entrepreneurs. So I think I had an entrepreneurial spirit, perhaps, and influences in that just because I had grown up around people who worked really long hours and did things they loved and, you know, had the highs and the lows of that.
And how about the fashion activism piece? What led you down that path?
I really would have never considered myself an activist, probably until the past couple years, but I've always been somebody who really cared deeply about my community. I've always volunteered for, honestly, as long as I can remember. I joined my first nonprofit board as a teenager. So giving back in community and trying to make the world a little bit better has always been a focus of mine. I just maybe wouldn't have called it activism. And then in my late 20s, I had two events happen within about a year and a half of each other, which really, I think, is what sort of put me in this trajectory. And the first is that my father died. And I think when somebody dies, it can really make you question a lot about, you know, what are you doing with your life? What is our life purpose? And then also, what is the legacy that we're leaving behind? You know, we only have a certain amount of time here to do whatever we do with it. And once we're gone, we can't take anything with us and our story ends there. So I started thinking a lot about, you know, what am I doing with my life? What is my legacy going to be? And I don't mean, you know, it has to be a grand legacy, but what am I going to leave behind me? And then the next year was the Rana Plaza collapse in Bangladesh, which killed over 1,000 people and injured 2,500 more. And this was a fashion factory. And at the time, I was then working in costume design. So I had gone from fashion design to costume design for film and television. And I'd always loved fashion and I had now worked in all these different areas and I'd never thought about really where things were being made or the actual, you know, human cost of the things that we were buying and wearing. And so this factory collapse, these horrific deaths and unnecessary deaths really just made me think about, you know, what am I doing in fashion? I loved costume design, but is this the legacy I want to leave behind? Is this going to really help somebody? And I decided that, you know, ultimately, I wanted my life to go in a direction that brought these two things, fashion and activism, together. And that's really what ultimately ended up launching Beat and Real.
Yeah, and I was curious because earlier you mentioned that your parents were entrepreneurs and that you had such an early start. You were on the fast track. Did them being entrepreneurs or the work that they were doing contribute to you becoming ultimately an entrepreneur yourself and having such an early start?
You know, the funny thing is that I think them being entrepreneurs originally dissuaded me from wanting to be one. I just, you know, my whole life had grown up watching the highs and lows of entrepreneurship, the incredibly long hours, you know, and the wonderful rewards and successes that can come from it and the really devastating failures that can come out of it. And I really wasn't interested in doing that. You know, I kind of thought I wanted something steady and stable and easy. Not that, you know, ultimately costume design is a steady, stable, easy career path, but it felt a little bit more so than, you know, having your own company and ultimately being in charge of everything at the end yourself. So really, entrepreneurship was not something I was interested in for a very long time. And I think I think after, you know, all of these events in my life kind of came together, it was more, that's just the direction my life needed to go, more less than that was really what I wanted to do. I just felt that there was a deep need for the kind of company that I wanted to create. And at the time, there really wasn't anything like it. And I thought, well, if nobody else is going to do this, then I guess I have to do it. I guess somebody has to do it, and that somebody is going to be me. So now that I've been self-employed and been an entrepreneur for many years, you know, I couldn't imagine not doing it. It's a very good fit for my personality. And I think there's, you know, it's really lovely being your own boss and having a flexible schedule. And I don't mind hard work, but yeah, it really wasn't something that I ever thought I would do.
So I'm wondering, how did you enter college at 15? I mean, was it just that they kept putting you ahead because you were doing extra work at home? How did you manage that?
That's a really good question. It really wasn't a goal of mine. I'm very studious. I love to read. So this does not mean that I'm a genius or something, that I started college so young. I think I'm very good at school. I'm very good at taking tests, if that makes sense. So I had skipped several grades. And I ended up, instead of going to high school, my teacher the prior year had suggested to my parents that maybe I just homeschool, that he really thought that high school just wouldn't be perhaps intellectually stimulating enough for me, and that if I could take some time and just get to study what I wanted to study and learn the way I wanted to learn, he thought that would be more beneficial. So I did that for a year, and honestly, I just read. It was wonderful. I just read a lot of books and, you know, just had a life, and I really think you can learn a lot that way. And after that, I did want to go back to something a little bit more structurally academic. And so I started going up to the community college and got my AA, my 2-year degree there, even though I was a little bit young. And at the time, they were a little resistant to letting me in, but I passed all the entrance exams. So they let me in. And once I had that, I was able to transfer to university. So it wasn't really ever something that was planned. It just kind of happened. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to most people, but I think it was a good path for me. You know, I think it gave me what I needed at the time.
Mm-hmm. And when did you decide to start Beat in Real?
Beat in Real was launched at the end of 2014, and I had the idea for it about a year beforehand. And I had the idea and started working on it and was really very comfortable in my creativity, in my ability to work hard, in a lot of things. And there were a lot of things I was not comfortable in. And that was really the business side, the marketing side. These are things I just never had done. And I just didn't feel that I could do this on my own. So I had brought on a business partner who was somebody I had known, and we started working on a company together and really got it right up until we were just about to launch. And I realized that it was just not a good fit. We did not share the same values. We did not share the same ethics. This was not going to be good for either of us in the long run. And so I ended up leaving the company. He bought me out, and I went off and started Beat in Real, which was similar. And he actually did not end up launching that. So it was kind of a long time in the making by the time I finally did launch, but it was something I'd been working on for about a year and a half by the time we launched in 2014.
So we're at that midway point, and we're going to take a quick little music break here, and we will be right back with Sika Schmidt. Good evening. This is Heartstock, and I'm Carol Murphy, your host. And our guest this evening is Sika Schmidt. Hi, Sika.
Hi.
We were just talking about the launch of Bead and Reel in 2014, and how have things progressed since then?
You know, things are completely different than I would have ever imagined. When I originally started, my goal was to start an online e-commerce boutique for vegan and fair trade fashion, and my company is completely different now. But I think that's kind of part of the entrepreneurial journey. Maybe what makes it a little bit fun is that it is a journey and you don't always know where you're going to end up.
So once you launched, when did you decide that it wasn't going to be your e-commerce boutique and why?
It took several years. So the first couple of years were definitely mostly focused on the e-commerce site. And I think there was really a need for it. And as I said, it was very hard to find sustainable fashion in general. It was hard to find it online. It was very hard to find somewhere that had a lot of different kinds of sustainability brought together. So, you know, maybe there was a place where you could buy vegan shoes, but they weren't necessarily fair trade. Or maybe there was somewhere you could buy fair trade clothing, but they, you know, weren't organic. And so what I was trying to do was bring all these things together. And that was a unique concept. As time went on, a few things happened. First of all, a lot more companies started launching both e-commerce stores and brick and mortar stores, and also just a lot of designers. So it became a lot more common. And I also just realized that I don't like retail. I am just not, it's not my cup of tea, to be honest. The shipping, there's just a lot of tedium in it that I do not enjoy. And so I realized that ultimately my goal wasn't really to be a retailer. It was really to make sustainable shopping easier. And I thought, okay, is this the way to make it easier? Or are there other ways to do this that I could be happier doing, and I could create space for somebody who really wants a boutique, who that's actually their dream and their goal and their skill sets and what they want to do? So this took many years to sort of suss out. And one of the things that helped with this is sort of with their serendipity or something around this time, I ended up acquiring the People Label, which was the Sustainable Fashion Affiliate Network. And so suddenly I had this network of sustainable brands and content creators, bloggers, influencers. And I thought, well, this is amazing. I can support them in helping make sustainable shopping easier, but I don't have to physically be the one that's, you know, selling things. So that allowed me to sort of pivot a little bit. And through Bead and Reel, I had been doing the fashion show, which at the time was called the Fair Trade Fashion Show. And around the same time that things started pivoting, I thought it made more sense for that to become its own independent organization. So I branched it out and made it a nonprofit. So kind of all these different things that I had been doing kind of started taking lives of their own. And also the retail just became the least interesting and least important part of Bead and Reel. And so the beginning of this year was when I actually officially closed the retail shop. But that allowed me to really grow the affiliate network and really grow the blog and focus on the fashion show, which we have every year. So I never would have seen any of this coming when I started. I, you know, envisioned that I would probably just have a retail store forever and maybe one day do a brick and mortar. But this is definitely, it's all a better fit for me. And I'm glad I got to go through this process to discover that.
Yes. And that leads me to the next question, which relates to, since you don't have the retail, then where's your funding come from? What's your business model?
So the affiliate network does bring in money. We have memberships, so brands pay a membership to join. I keep 3% of all the sales that are generated through any affiliate sales, and we have, you know, almost 80 different affiliates. So maybe I should backtrack. Affiliate marketing is a kind of marketing where, say, you know, you're reading a blog and they recommend a product to you and you click on it and you buy it. And they must disclose that this is going to happen, but they can potentially get a commission, like a small commission, maybe 10% or 15% of that sale for helping lead to that. So this is one way that online media can help monetize their blogs and their vlogs and their all their different kinds of writing. And this is also a great thing for brands because they can help incentivize more media to talk about them. So my affiliate network is specifically focused on the sustainable fashion industry. So all of the members and any of the sales that get led to that, I get to keep 3% of that, which is lovely. And I have the membership. And then same with the blog. So I also have the Beat and Real blog where I can share about products, and I only would share about products I 100% believe in, but I can share about products and get a small commission on it if it leads to a sale, as well as collaborating with brands in a more traditional way where maybe they would hire me and pay me to write a blog post about their products. So there's a lot of different avenues for funding, and it's a different model than retail, absolutely, for sure, but it's also significantly lower overhead because you're not buying product, you're not storing it and warehousing it and shipping it. So, you know, Beat and Real now makes less than it did as a retail shop, but it also spends significantly less.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I mean, if you had a magic wand and you could wave it, what is the final outcome and impact that you do want to have upon the fashion industry at large?
I really would love to see sustainable fashion just become fashion, that we don't even need to say the word sustainable anymore, that it is just simply that's how fashion is now done, and that we achieve this through brands having the means and the incentives and also the understanding of how to produce more sustainably. Obviously, there's no such thing as a perfect way to manufacture or any kind of perfect fashion. There's always inherently going to be challenges and some waste. There's always going to be struggles. It's never going to be 100% sustainable. We can make it so much better than what it is right now. And then the other is allowing consumers the information and also the access so that they can make these better choices, just really simply, really affordably. So I think that's ultimately my goal. And that's part of what I really like about getting to now work with so many brands and writers, is that we have this big, broad reach. So it doesn't just have to be people who come to, you know, my blog or who come to my brand, that they can now find any of these different brands or any of these different writers, and I can help support them in growing up their reach as well. So I think ultimately my goal is that sustainable fashion is no longer needed. It's just fashion.
Mm-hmm. So you won an award, Sustainable Business Award. Was that last year? And how did that come about?
That was 2 years ago, actually. Oh. And, you know, I don't remember how I originally heard about it, but we ended up getting nominated. And it's an award for all industries within sustainability. So it's not just a fashion award. And it's broken by revenues. So I was in the smallest, or maybe the middle, not the second smallest category. So I was in the category of businesses that made $100,000 to $1 million a year. And I definitely was on the lower end of that. So I was competing with, you know, much bigger businesses. There were 21 or 20 of us in this category. And there were really only a very small handful of fashion businesses. There were businesses in food and energy and all these maybe, you know, quote unquote, more serious industries. So it truly never occurred to me that I would win. Like, not even for a second did I consider that I was winning, because I'm just such a small company. I'm a one woman company and I'm a fashion company. And I just didn't think that would be able to compete against all these other bigger, more serious, quote unquote, businesses. So when I won, I was just absolutely shocked. I had not prepared a speech and I was so overwhelmed by this just surprise that I gave the worst speech I've ever given. And I think I just fumbled through some words, you know, and said, thank you. And very underwhelming. But I was so heartened by this, just because it said to me that fashion is being taken seriously as an industry that has a huge impact on the world, which it does. It's not frivolous. It's a massive $3 trillion industry that employs, you know, 60 million people and impacts every one of us. And it also just made me feel really good that as, you know, one person small business, as a woman-owned business, that I could compete with these bigger companies.
Mm. And I was hoping that we could touch on the Impact Fashion Show also. How does that fit into all of this?
Yeah, the Impact Fashion Show, which is a new name that we rebranded this year. Prior, it was the Fair Trade Fashion Show. It grew out of Beat and Real. It was an annual fashion show I started doing as a part of Beat and Real to help educate and bring community together and bring fashion shows to LA and just sort of show a different side of sustainable fashion. And so after 3 years of doing this and partnering with charities every year, I just thought it made more sense for it to become its own nonprofit. So that happened about 2 years ago, where it became its own business and we continued forward. And now this year is when we've rebranded, and it's really one of the most fun things I get to do is putting on this annual event in Los Angeles. We have an all-day marketplace of vendors and food food and panels and workshops and speakers and yoga. And then in the evening, we have an invite-only fashion show, which is always just so much fun. And I get to pull from, you know, all the best sustainable fashion brands and just create this really beautiful story of what sustainable fashion can look like. And really, I like to use it as a space to kind of show people that whatever they expect sustainable fashion to be, it's not that, that it can be absolutely anything. Whatever your style is, whatever your taste is, whatever your aesthetic is, you can find that. And so that's really the point of the show, is to bring new people into this movement.
And you mentioned that you wanted to show another side of sustainable fashion. Can you talk about that a little bit? You touched on it, but I'm just wondering, you know, I think that the general public may have kind of a very granola, crunchy idea of what that looks like.
Absolutely. And I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I think a lot of people do think it's a little bit crunchy or granola, or it's a lot of, you know, bright prints or African prints or Indian prints, which are beautiful and wonderful, but maybe not everybody's style. Or they think that it's very expensive, which it can be, but there are also a lot of brands that are very affordable and very competitive. So I think there's just a lot of misconceptions. Even when I originally launched as the Fair Trade Fashion Show, you know, I had people say to me, oh, I didn't even know fashion could be fair trade. I thought that was only coffee. So I think there's just a lot of lack of information, misinformation, misconceptions. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like to use this space and this show as a space for, is to show that every kind of fashion can be fair trade. Every kind of price point can be mindfully made. And so there really isn't a reason for us to not be supporting it.
Mm. And how might listeners find you to learn more about what you're up to?
Probably the best place is beadandreel.com, beadandreel.com. And from there, you can find the various social media. I manage all the social media. So if you send a message, I will get back to you and say hi back.
Thank you so much, Sika, for being on Heartstock. I really enjoyed it and love what you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. It was really an honor to be asked to join you, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of the day.
And you as well. This is Heartstock, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. We shall see you next week. Peace.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.
That time was made for you and me.